Like to call the meeting to order of the Unalaska City Council, and a regular meeting is called to order at 6:00 PM on Tuesday, October 26th. Before we get started, I'd like to read the, or ask Councilman Bell to read the city's mission statement, which is now printed on the top of each of the city's council's agenda, and is a good reminder to all of us why we are here. The city's mission, please.
The city's mission is to provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. City clerk, may I have a roll call, please?
Bell?
Here.
Coleman?
Here.
Booby?
Here.
Nicholson?
Here.
Robinson?
Present.
Tungle? He is on mute. There's no option for Mr. Tungle to unmute. There's no option for him to unmute, but I can see him online. We're gonna go back to Mr. Tungle. Tudikoff?
Yes. We have a quorum. Councilman Tungle is having telephone problems right now. Hopefully it's on the first. Councilman Tungle is having problems with his phone. Hopefully he'll get on with us here shortly. At this time, I'll ask Councilman Looby to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hey, thank you very much, Councilman Looby. This time I'd like to recognize a real fine-looking crowd tonight. Welcome to our meeting, Coast Guard Unalaska Dutch Harbor Detachment. Thank you for being here. Mr. Corey Nelson, special guest, superintendent, great your last name, Smith School District, and all other visitors. Thank you very much for being here this evening with us. At this time, I'll item under legislative action is oath of office for council seats CCD, Councilman Looby, and CCF, Councilman Tungle, and CCG for Councilman Coleman. Acting city clerk will now administer the oath of office to Danine Looby, Orlando Tungle, and Sherry Coleman.
So please raise your right hand.
Right, not left.
And follow along.
Okay.
I state your name.
I, Danine Looby,
do solemnly swear that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties of a member of the City Council of the City of Unalaska in true accord with the Constitution of the United States of America, the laws of the State of Alaska, and the Code of Ordinances of the City of Unalaska.
Okay, I, Danine Looby, do solemnly swear that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties of the member of the City Council of the City of Unalaska in true accord with the Constitution of the United States of America, the laws of the State of Alaska, and the Code of Ordinances of the City of Unalaska.
I take this oath freely, without the least equivocation, mental reservation, or self-evasion of mind whatsoever.
I take this oath freely, without the least equivocation, mental reservation, or self-evasion of mind whatsoever.
So go ahead and sign, please.
Congratulations, Councilman Luby.
So, Councilmember Tingle, if you could follow along and raise your right hand and do the oath of office with us. So I state your name, do hereby solemnly swear that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties of a member of the City Council of the City of Unalaska in true accord with the Constitution of the United States of America, the laws of the State of Alaska, and the Code of Ordinances of City of Unalaska. Mr. Tungle, can you hear us? He is online and he has muted himself again. Let me ask to unmute him. Mr. Tungle, can you hear us? I believe so. Mr. Tungle, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Thank you. So we're going to do your oath of office over the phone. So if you could read your oath and can you do your oath, please?
Could I go ahead and read it?
Yes, please.
I, Alejandro R. Tungle, do solemnly swear that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties as a member of the City Council of the City of Unalaska in true accord with the Constitution of the United States of America, the laws of the State of Alaska, and the Code of Ordinance of the City of Unalaska. I take this oath freely without the least equivocation, mental reservation, and self-evasion of mine whatsoever.
Okay, congratulations,
Councilman Tungle.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilman.
Perfect.
So, research my voice. I state your name. Do solemnly swear that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties of a member of the City Council of the City of Unalaska in true accord with the Constitution of the United States of America, the laws of the State of Alaska, and the Code of Ordinances of.
I, Sherry Coleman, do solemnly swear that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties of a member of the City Council of the City of Unalaska in true accord with the Constitution of the United States of America, the laws of the State of Alaska, and the Code of Ordinances of the City of Unalaska. I take this oath freely without the least equivocation, mental reservation, or self-evasion of mind whatsoever.
Congratulations, Councilman Coleman. Next item under our legislative agenda is appointment of the vice mayor. May I have a motion and a second to appoint the vice mayor, please?
I'll move to appoint Dennis Robinson.
appoint the vice mayor and Councilman Dennis Robinson. Is there any discussion? Councilman Holman?
Yes, I think Councilman Robinson has been doing this ever since we began the vice mayorship, and I think he's done an excellent job in fulfilling the role that entails when he's here and in your absence, Mayor Tudyakov. So I appreciate the work that he does. It does take extra work as a councilman, and there's no extra pay for that. So thank you again for fulfilling that duty, and I hope that you will accept that and do it for another year.
Councilman Coleman, any further discussion? Okay. Yeah. On a roll call, please, for Vice Mayor Robinson.
Yes, Mayor. Booby. Coleman.
Yes.
Tungo.
Yes.
Nicholson.
Yes.
Robinson.
Yes.
Bell.
Yes.
Roll call vote of 6-0. I've been appointed as vice mayor for one more year. Councilman Robinson.
Thank you.
Next item C, oath of office for police officer John David Squires. Please to introduce a new public safety officer at this time.
To obey the lawful orders of my superior officer, to abide by the law enforcement professional code of ethics, to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the State of Alaska, and to observe, uphold the laws of the United States, the State of Alaska, and the City of Unalaska.
I accept as a condition of continued employment as a police officer the requirement to, at all times, abide by the rules and regulation of the City of Unalaska, the Unalaska Department of Public Safety.
I accept as a condition of continued employment as a police officer that the requirement to at all times abide by the rules and regulations of the City of Unalaska, the Unalaska Department of Public Safety.
I affirm my allegiance to the people of the City of Unalaska who have appointed me as guardian of their lives and property.
I affirm my allegiance to the people of the City of Unalaska who have appointed me as guardian of their lives and property.
I take this oath knowing full well the responsibility of my office, and I promise to act at all times with integrity, honesty, and honor as a law enforcement, so help me God.
I take this oath knowing full well the responsibility of my office, and I promise to act at all times with integrity, honesty, and honor as a law enforcement officer, so help me God.
Congratulations. Congratulations, Officer John Squires. Okay, thank you. Our next item is a appointment to AML, not an appointment, but authorization. Without objection, Councilman Robinson is requested to have the ability to run for the AML board. He's presently on that board, and discussions with the city manager this morning. I don't have a problem with it. It's okay if it's, anybody objects, so hold their peace. All right. You have authority to run for whatever seat.
Thank you. It's this Region 9, so.
Okay. Which represents other communities.
I represent 33 other communities, yes.
Okay. October 19th of 2021 special meeting.
Make a motion to approve the minutes of October 12th, 2021, and the minutes of October 19th, 2021.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson and second by Councilman Nicholson to approve October 12th, the regular meeting, and October 19th, special meeting minutes. If there's no objection, the proposed minutes are hereby adopted by consensus. Our next item is the reports. And the city manager.
Yes, Mayor and Council. I do have a few things to add to the manager's report that's included in your packet. One thing that we just learned, these first couple of things are related to the second item on the manager's report. We did just learn that it looks like we're going to bring in at least $300,000 more than we budgeted for. In FY22 for the fisheries business tax, we budgeted $3.3 million, and we just heard from the state, because we were asking, that we will likely be bringing in at least $3.6 million. The exact amount is still being finalized by the state. So the impacts of the closures for that line item will be seen next fiscal year. So those are based on last year's catch. But that's a small bit of good news, and that's always good to have to share. Again, we are hoping to have something. I've been working with Frank Kelty and Jim Sharp. We're hoping to have a presentation to share with council of what we know at this point for impacts of this year's revenues and future year revenues based on some of the fisheries issues that we're currently experiencing on the November 9th council meeting. So more to come on that. There's also some interest in discussing the use of that regional landing exemptions to permit the south region crab to be landed in the northern region this season. So we will be having a regional landing relief coordinating commission meeting this week. That's being planned for Thursday. The mayor will be on that call. He is the named representative for Unalaska Crab Inc. I will be calling in as well to learn more, and we'll share what we learned at the regularly scheduled Unalaska Crab Inc. meeting set up for November 9th. So more to come on that. Last week, this is not in your manager's report. Last week we had quite a bit of a windstorm. So we do want to make sure that people are aware that the city is doing an assessment, a damage assessment. We've issued a couple of news releases on that. That will help us document what the impact has been. Links for that assessment are available on KUCB, also on the city webpage, and also through those news releases. And folks who participate in that assessment really then would be eligible to go ahead and experience some landfill fee reduction and assistance for storm-related damage starting tomorrow through November 6th. So that gets you about a week and a half to get things down there. So there you go. There's a resource for you. And you can email damage@cionalaska.ak.us. Thank you, Madam Clerk. Or click on a link. And again, that's available on multiple websites. That'll take you right to a form to fill out. So that's that. I do also want to remind, this is related to an item that I do have on the manager's report. Friday did have a good meeting with our state and federal lobbyists during the storm. We talked a little bit about how we can better coordinate some of our state and federal priorities. That discussion also kind of branched off into trying to get some ideas together for the federal lobby trip. One thing that I wanted to make clear for those that are traveling for that federal lobby trip is that proof of vaccination will be required to go into a great number of federal buildings. So if you have that, please bring that documentation. We also need to make sure that you all are bringing your laptops with you in case we have to switch any of the meetings that we have planned to Zoom or another digital format. So Michelle Price should be reaching out to you here shortly if she hasn't already to help you kind of guide you through that. So that's all the updates I have. Happy to try to answer any questions that you might have for me.
Council members have any questions for city manager? Councilman Luby?
Yeah, it's not necessarily a question, but more of a thank you for getting Nixles out there. They've been awesome letting the community know of different things, especially the tsunami siren today, because the last one, you know, that was kind of confusing. So I just wanted to say thanks for getting those out. I think that's a great way to let the community know what's going on. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilman Luby. Any further comments or questions for the city manager on your report? Thank you, City Manager. The next one, item on our reports is the financial. Councilman Tungo.
Yeah. Just a quick question on the power outage. What happened in there? I guess we got a part that we need to install when it slows down with the processor and everything in there. That's something I think we got to tell the public that we are planning on replacing or adding something at the powerhouse.
Yes, Councilmember Tungle, I think you're asking about the Viper replacement plan, and Steve Tompkins is here and can touch on that. I did share that with you, but you're right. We didn't talk about that publicly, so Steve will give us the good, quick, and dirty on how we're responding.
Thank you.
Yeah, Councilman Tungle, we are planning to upgrade the Vipers. We have all the materials on site. We have them spread out on the third floor of the powerhouse. Matt Scott from Optimera is going to be working with Davlin Hall, and we have an engineered solution that we're going to implement. I was told that we were waiting for the total load to drop to 100 amps, and I think this morning it was like 98. So I think the plan is to start doing those Vipers next week.
That's good. Thank you. That's good for the community to know that we're doing something about this power outage. Thank you.
Yeah, it's my understanding it's just safer if we let the load drop so that we can just completely de-energize the cabinet and run. And industry's been taken off, buying less power, so we're right at that threshold where we can start doing the work.
Thank you,
Steve.
Thank you, Councilman Tungle. Any further questions for Council? Councilman Luby?
I was going to try to catch you before you left there, but during the Viper replacement, is that going to require power outages for people? And if so, can we please try to get Nixles out there so people know way ahead of time? That way they can shut their electronics and stuff down.
I think by timing it to the low load, we should be able to do it without a power outage. That's what we're hoping. But we'll know after the first one.
who is going to, where's the first one going to be?
There isn't really a manual for this. I mean, this is something we're doing, and we have some really good minds working on it, but, and it was engineered. We paid EPS to engineer the solution, but we've never done it. After the first one, we'll have a really good idea on how to do it, but they're prefabbing some of the assemblies to go in the cabinet so that if we do have to have a power outage, it'll be relatively quick, but we're hoping we don't have to have one.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Steve. Any further questions? Okay, thank you. Next item is the financial for August 2021. I'll turn it over to the city manager.
Yes, Jim is on the line to review some of the highlights in this monthly financial report that's in your packet, and I'm going to go ahead and pass it along to Jim.
Good evening, and thanks, Aaron. Good evening, Council and Mr. Mayor. So you do have in front of you a copy of the August 2021 financial information. And I did have a bit of information that I wanted to might augment what we have here to give you a little bit more update on where we're at with some of those seafood taxes that we're concerned about currently. And the information that so what you see on your screen is through August. I did check today to see where we're at on some of the others. So, for example, on the raw seafood tax,
the local 2% landing tax. We're at $2.4 million, or roughly 58% of our budgeted amount.
And in discussions that I've had with Frank Kelty as we're going through some of this reevaluation of the fish tax, that is due in large part to a robust pollock season B. And the hope then is that will offset some of the losses that we will encounter with respect to the king crab season cancellation and the significant reduction in the Bering Sea snow crab. I also wanted to let you know that, so you see that the Alaska Fisheries Resource Landing Tax is a zero with a balance of $3.9 million. What you'll see when you review the September financials is that we did receive about a little over $4.5 million for that in September. So we're already $600,000 over budget on that, which is fantastic. And typically we receive a smaller amount in the springtime, so March or April. I don't know what that will be, obviously, but hopefully that will continue to help with offsetting some of the losses that we have incurred or expect to incur. And then on the sales tax, you see it at $1.9 million or 32% of budget. On here, I checked today, we're at 2.1, or roughly 36% of budget. And I guess I should have mentioned early on, to kind of get a frame of reference or context, anything that's at 16% is about where you want to be 2 months of the fiscal year. So at 36%, we're doing pretty well. And then on the other one I wanted to mention with respect to taxes, is the property taxes. The second half payments were due last week, and I checked today. So we budgeted $7.1 million. We actually collected $7.4, almost $7.5 million. So again, we're exceeding our budget on those, and hopefully some of those will offset the losses that we plan to experience on the crab issues. I have one other item, but I wanted to see if there was any questions at the moment with what I've presented so far.
Have any questions for Jim? Council? No? All right. Continue.
All right. The last item I wanted to mention, if you scroll a couple of pages, Karen, we'll go to the summary of the utility revenue report. It should be a couple of pages next. Right here. So the highlight I want to say here is if you look in that far right-hand column, the utility revenues were $1.5 million ahead of where we were after August last year. And I suspect that that's due in part to the increased fees or the rate schedule. But I also suspect that's partially due to the additional processing that has taken place with the pollock season and that sort of thing. That's really all that I have that I wanted to offer tonight on the financials, and I am available for any questions that you may have.
Well, thank you, Jim. Are there any questions at this time on the financials? All right. Apparently, there's no questions. Thank you very much for your report.
Thank you.
Okay, our next item is item number 8, Mayoral Proclamation, November 1st, 2021, Extra Mile Day in Unalaska. Whereas Alaska is a community which acknowledges that a special vibrancy exists within the entire community when its individual citizens collectively go the extra mile in personal effort, volunteerism, and service. And whereas Alaska is a community which encourages citizens to maximize their personal contributions to the community by giving of themselves wholeheartedly and with total effort, commitment, and conviction to their individual ambitions, family, friends, and community. And whereas the Alaska is a community which chooses to shine a light on and celebrate the individuals and organizations within its community who go the extra mile in order to make a difference and lift up fellow community members. And whereas Unalaska acknowledges the mission of the Extra Mile America to create more than 550 extra mile cities in America, proud to support Extra Mile Day on November 1st, 2021. Now, therefore, as the mayor of Unalaska, I do proclaim November 1st, 2021 to be Extra Mile Day. I urge each individual in the community to make on this day not only to go the extra mile in his or her own life, but also to acknowledge those who are inspirational in their efforts and commitment to make their organizations, family, and community, and country, and world a better place. So proclaimed on October 26, 2021. Extra Mile Day, November 1st. Next item 9 is awards. First one is a Community Extra Mile Award. I'll read the proclamation into the record and award on a separate an award to the individuals and group. First up, City of Unalaska recognizes the Marine Safety Detachment of the U.S. Coast Guard for their city's extra mile effort. Since they arrived in Unalaska mid to late January, they have been a consistent source of volunteer help for many PCR programs. Notably, the entire MSD detachments showed up and helped with our Heart of the Aleutians Festival for nearly 12 hours, helping with set up and running a variety of community games, helping where necessary, and finally cleaning up after the event. Several members of the detachment are currently serving as coaches for PCR youth basketball teams, and they have made the effort to help at any PCR program where they can be of assistance. The local Marine Safety Detachment are continually rotating in and out of town, and while individual members of these detachments often assist from time to time with programming, this current detachment as a group has distinguished themselves locally with their willingness to get involved in the community and be of tremendous assistance to our PCR programming. It is for these reasons that the city recognizes the local MSD detachment with the Extra Mile Award. Please join me in congratulating the MSD. Whoever wants to step up, or all of you, come on, walk on through here. We usually have one individual, but this detachment that's here in Unalaska, as the previous groups that have been here, have been part of the community in a lot of different areas, and I really appreciate your work that you guys do in our community. We had several nominations for the Extra Mile Award this year, and we decided we'd give out one for the group and one for individual. The City of Unalaska recognized Corey Nelson for the City's Extra Mile Award. Corey has gone the extra mile in the season's youth basketball program. Corey has volunteered to help coach three teams during the season. This is a considerable amount of time and commitment and requires Corey to attend three practices and games each week, totaling over 36 hours of cumulative service throughout the season. While PCR often sees parents sign up to help coach one team, it's not often that you have a parent agree to help coach three teams. Having caring and invested adults who are willing to spend time with local youth, sharing their passion for youth basketball and inspiring them to achieve their full potential during the season is imperative for the development of the players. PCR could not provide these leagues without those invested volunteers. Corey has been a tremendous help in making this season successful. It is for these reasons the City of Unalaska recognizes Corey Nelson with the Extra Mile Award.
Thanks, Vince, for your service to the community and the country.
Thank you. As you can see, the Extra Mile Award most came from PCR, which is has done a great job this year in bringing our, even with all the hard times we've had this last year, to see the kids go out and, you know, have a great time is very important to the parents and to the community. So thank you again. Our next item is adoption of the agenda. May I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda?
Move to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, seconded by Councilman Luby. There's no objection. The agenda is adopted. Next item is community input and announcements. This is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council or to make announcements of interest to the community. There'll be another opportunity for comment near the end of the meeting. Does anyone present wish to speak? PCR.
Thank you, Mayor. Just like to announce that the PCR will be holding our Halloween event. It'll be on Sunday, October 31st, from 4:30 to 7:30. This event will be play games, and then as you play games, then you can head right out to the trunk or treat, which then they can go. There's a lot of people that are there, be in the parking lot, and I'm hoping that it'll be a good day so that it's not so cold, but the kids can get some candy at the trunk or treat. We're looking forward to it's a new event. It's hosted by the Unalaska Visitors Bureau on PCR, so this is the first time we've done the trunk or treat. So we want to do both those events. The last event I'd like to tell you about, it's a ways off, but it's important that we talk about it today, is that we're going to have our holiday celebration and bazaar on December 4th from 11 to 3. However, vendor registration is now. It's now open. And so if you're a vendor and you'd like to be part of the holiday celebration bazaar, it is now time for you to go in and get your booth and get your little table and do what you need to do. So it's a little while off, but all you vendors, it's now time to get your vendor and get it all set up. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger, and I'd like to say thank you for that great haunted house you put over the weekend. The kids really enjoyed that when I'm here, and it was a great haunted house.
It was great, and the youth that did that, our council, our teen council, made enough money that they're going to be able to do some really, really good things for the community this year. And for that, and it was a good project for them, and they had a good time doing it, and it scared a lot of people, so it was fun. Thank you.
Thanks for that, and tell the group we say thank you for their hard work. City Clerk, were there any written comments submitted, or does anyone on Zoom or on the phone wish to speak?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Our next item is the public comment on agenda items. This is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda. If they don't want to wait until the item comes up in the regular agenda, to comment later during the regular agenda meeting, when the particular item is being discussed, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Does anyone wish in the room wish to speak on agenda items? Okay, thank you. City Clerk, has anyone written comments, or do they have anyone on Zoom or phone?
No, sir, we don't have any more.
Thank you. Our next item is a item 13 as a work session. We have a motion and a second to go into a work session.
I make a motion to go into work session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Nicholson and seconded by Councilman Robinson. Is there no objection? We'll be going into a work session at 6:44. So, let's see. First item is review the options for the permanent fund with the Alaska Permanent Capital Management. I'll turn this over to City Manager, please.
Yes, thank you, Mayor and Council. So we are continuing the process to address our fiscal sustainability, and we focus tonight on the permanent fund. Future meetings will focus in on other key components such as the emergency fund and related policies. So Council asked us, as a reminder, to focus in on that permanent fund and explore various options for and the implications of that initial value of that fund. So Jim has provided the memo for you this evening that we hope gives you a little bit of a context for what you'll hear from APCM, particularly as it relates to our current fund structure and considerations related to that permanent fund's initial value. Key things that we're thinking about tonight are that starting value of the permanent fund with Jim's memo in mind, the type of allocations for the fund, moderate or moderate growth, and when council might want to begin receiving distribution. So APCM will kind of walk you through what 1 year looks like, what 3 years looks like, or if we waited 5 years to receive distributions. So with that little bit of an overview, I'm going to go ahead and pass it along to Jim, who will touch on a few of the concepts in his memo, and then he'll pass it on to APCM. I do realize that not all of you at the dais in this room know who it all is on the line. So you have three people on the line from, I believe, three people from APCM. You'll hear from Vinay, Brandy, and Michaela, but I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to Jim. And if I've missed anybody, I trust that APCM will introduce us then. All right, so go ahead. Take it away, Jim.
Good evening again. And you have before you the memo that was prepared. And really, for me, the purpose of that was to lay out for council essentially what we have in terms of your cash balance, our short-term investments, or AMLEP, and what we have in our investment accounts. The long-term investment account, and also see how that's divided up amongst the different departments within the city. And if you look on, it really starts at the bottom of page 27 and goes through page 25, where it lays out how much when you think of the general fund, and that's where all of those items are recorded within the city's accounting system. And so you'll see that we have, you know, we owe the different funds, we owe the different proprietary funds certain amounts of money, and what it leaves for the general fund is perfect here, and they're right there, $84,800,000 roughly to use for general fund operations and to help for any emergency operations that we may have, and also to seed the permanent fund. And I've got a little table here where currently we have $25 million set aside for the emergency operations. And the thought being at a previous council meeting that $40 million is about where we were thinking on the permanent fund. And that leaves, you know, nearly $20 million for city operations, which if you look down a little bit on that next paragraph, good planning says that the city should have just shy of $12 million for operating expenses. And what that represents is about 6 months worth of the general fund operating expenses. So I wanted to share that with you to kind of keep that in mind as you go through and you hear the presentation from the APCM folks. And, you know, as you adjust that dollar amount, if you choose to go lower than that, you know, obviously that would provide a little bit in additional city operation monies. You know, given where we're at, I would be hesitant to recommend going above the $40 million, but certainly that's, you know, APCM will help with that decision-making process as well. And with that, I'll turn it over to the folks at APCM.
Okay, perfect. So we did provide some presentation material. I believe it's probably in your packet already, and I'll start with kind of the agenda and next steps. Did we bring that up on our end, or will you be pulling that up here? Oh, perfect. So I'm actually going to hand it over to Bill. He's going to provide a broad overview, and then we'll get into the information that you requested.
Thanks, Brandy. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. Thank you for letting us speak to you. On the line, we have Brandy, who just mentioned she's the CIO of Multi-Asset Strategies. We also have Vinay Sharma. He's a senior portfolio manager. He did all the modeling and knows on the few slides that we'll be going over. And also on the call, you have Nicola Covio, who's part of our Institutional Client Relationships Group. Since the last time we were in front of you, we have been working on the modeling and really focusing on the fourth bucket or the portfolio, the permanent fund. So all the information today really focuses on that. We talked to you in our previous work session that a permanent fund can be utilized to improve fiscal sustainability. providing an additional source of revenue. Perm funds generally take advantage of higher risk capacity to improve earnings by additional asset classes, and Brandy will kind of move into that, and I see that the permanent fund characteristic is shown in front of you. But our discussion with you tonight, to wrap it kind of up and what we're trying to accomplish, is to give you information that will help you identify an optimal size of the portfolio, a distribution start time, and strategic asset allocation. So with that, I'll kind of turn it back over to Brandy, and she has extensive experience and knowledge working with permanent funds, with entities like yourself and other government and entities with throughout the state. So with that, Brandy, I'll hand it back over to you.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. So as Bill mentioned, we do have three issues that we wanted to address in terms of your questions regarding the permanent fund: optimal size, distribution start time, and the strategic asset allocation. And so we're going to first talk about the strategic asset allocation. We, in our initial discussions, we talked a little bit about two portfolio options that are in line with the overall allocation, are mixed between stocks and bonds and alternatives with some other permanent funds that we also manage for municipalities. And these two allocations are commonly seen with the other permanent funds that we do manage. And so what we wanted to do here is focus a bit on the overall strategic asset allocation. So we're going to give you some risk and return numbers here in this table. There's a lot of numbers everywhere. And so I want to first explain the reason why we want to provide this information is it gives you a long-term expected return that you could utilize for strategic planning purposes. But additionally, we're going to give you a range of returns that we think you can experience, throughout this very long investment time horizon, which is important because it will start to get you familiar with what the ride might feel like. And so I think a lot of times when we think about risk, we think about, what is the risk at the end of a long time horizon? And we forget to address what it might feel like in between. And that's really important because obviously it has implications to the distributions that can come from the permanent fund. You're obviously going to be monitoring this as we move through time. And so it's important to prep ourselves for what we might experience. And the reason why we want to prep ourselves is because we don't want to be in a situation where we end up in stressful market conditions and start to panic and then abandon our long-term strategy. And so we have really honed in on sharing these numbers with our clients, especially since we learned how people might react to an overall crisis situation like the financial crisis. And so this information, I think, is really helpful. So I think the key takeaway here is that we have a moderate allocation and then a moderate growth allocation. So obviously the moderate growth allocation is going to have a bit more risk associated with it. But let me focus your attention first on the line that says long-term return. And so that long-term return number for the moderate allocation is 5.5%. And so that's a number you could utilize for strategic planning purposes. For example, if you have X amount invested in this over a 10-year horizon, we think the average return you'll experience over a 10-year period is 5.5%. If you take on a bit more risk, of course, you should expect you would be compensated for that. And the moderate growth allocation does have a bit more risk associated with it. So that long-term return is 6.1%. Now, of course, the permanent fund likely has the objective of trying to preserve your purchasing power. And so we want to account for inflation in our analysis. And our long-term inflation assumption is 2%. I know, of course, we see the headlines today about the elevated prints of inflation way above 2%. And our 2% projection for inflation, really is predicated on the fact that the Federal Reserve, the policymakers, are targeting 2% inflation over a longer time period. We're assuming they're going to meet that objective, and thus we're integrating that into this analysis. So if you have the moderate allocation with a long-term return of 5.5%, and you have 2% for to cover inflation, that leaves you with net earnings of 3.5%. And so 3.5% is a number you could utilize for distributions. You could save some of it for growth. How you use this net earnings is completely up to you and how it fits into the overall city's budget. So we like to talk about net earnings in a couple of ways. We can say it's the sustainable distribution rate. So we think you can take out 3.5%, even if markets are down, and still achieve the long-term return of 5.5%. Now, of course, if you didn't want to distribute all of the 3.5% of net earnings, you could also save some of it for future growth and just leave it in the permanent fund and allow that to compound over time. So that gives you some idea of the overall returns, but let's start talking about what the ride might feel like. And I'm going to focus your attention on the top line where it says annual return. And you see a range there. For the moderate allocation, it's negative 11.3% to 22.9%. And so what those numbers are is our estimate on what you could experience in terms of an annualized return throughout this really long time horizon of a 10-year projection period we're looking at. So, for example, if we finish a year and we're down 11%, we would not be surprised. We think that's within the realm of, you know, the risk of this portfolio. And we note that also the portfolio could be up over 22%, and that wouldn't surprise us as well. The key here is that those negative years will be offset by the higher earning years, so, you know, 22%. But when we average those annual returns or the ups and downs, we think it's going to converge to that long-term return of 5.5%. And so we're providing the range just to give you some idea of where we think most of the returns could be as we kind of move through this 10-year projection horizon. Again, averaging the lower returns and the higher returns will eventually converge to the 5.5% long-term return. Now, the range of returns I just went over for the moderate allocation covers the majority of the return distributions we think you can experience. But we have to account for real volatile or crisis situations. And I'd like to explain that these are situations that have occurred, of course, in history. COVID is a really good example. Certainly, nobody predicted that particular virus would turn into a pandemic, and nobody predicted policymakers would actually shut down the economy altogether. And so those types of things, by definition, you can't foresee. But you want to prepare yourself for experiencing that, and that's where we bring in the average loss in extreme conditions. And so you can see for the moderate allocation, that's down 21%. I think this is really important because APCM, we utilize this information to make sure, for example, if the permanent fund goes through a crisis situation and at some point down over 20%, can you still meet your overall goals and objectives? So that's one way we use it. And certainly during COVID, we were monitoring what our clients were actually experiencing in the drawdown and comparing it to our estimate of the average loss in extreme conditions. And that's really important because that tells us whether or not we think we're still on track with the initial plan we laid out for each of our clients. And so certainly during the COVID drawdown in March of last year, we came really close to these extreme loss conditions. So naturally, with the moderate growth allocation, it has a little bit more risk associated with it, still very much within the realm of what we see for other permanent funds. We have that long-term return that's a bit higher at 6.1%, but with that extra return, we know we're taking a bit more risk. So you can see the range of returns have a little bit more downside to it. Down 13.7% or up 26.8%, certainly within the realm of possibilities. And then in very stressful conditions, we could expect to be down like 24%. So again, the objective of sharing all of these numbers is to give you a long-term return that is you could utilize for long-term planning purposes, but also give you a range of returns to help you understand what the overall ride might feel like as we move through time. So that was a lot of information, so I want to pause here a little bit to see if there's any questions I can answer about this information.
Questions or comments on so far? Council?
Okay.
Okay, you.
Okay, so now the next slide, we're going to try to begin to address the overall optimal size of the permanent fund, you know, how much you choose to fund to start the account, as well as the distribution start time. So we already know we're dealing with two portfolios that are common in, you know, permanent funds, the moderate allocation, and then the moderate growth. And what we've done here on this page, it has a lot of information, but what we've done was try to help you on one page look at different starting market values and then different starting distribution times. So let's just focus for a minute on the starting market value of $25 million. So if you funded the permanent fund with $25 million and you chose the moderate allocation, we think that if you began taking distributions in July of 22, so within this next fiscal year, the expected ending value at the end of a 10-year horizon for the permanent fund would be $30.28 million. If we looked at a $25 million portfolio in the moderate allocation and starting distributions in July of 22, the average distributions over the 10-year horizon you can see there is 0.97, right? These are in millions. So 970,000, that's the average distribution. The cumulative distributions over 10 years, so if we added up all of those distributions over 10 years, we think you would distribute over a 10-year horizon $9.7 million from the portfolio. So that kind of gives you some information related to starting the distributions in July of 22, but you could follow the chart across if you did distributions starting in July of 24, or if you started, you know, 5 years from now in July of 2026. So, of course, if we start distributions later, we should expect our ending market value to be a bit higher because you're allowing some time for compounding before you begin your distribution. And we should also expect the distributions or the average distribution to be a bit higher because you're waiting and you have a higher portfolio market value. So, again, just to make sure that we can read the whole table, I'll stay focused on the $25 million. Moderate allocation, if you begin distributing in 3 years, we think the expected ending market value would be $32.59 million. The average distribution over the 10-year horizon is just over $1 million. And the cumulative distribution over the 10-year horizon is $8.37 million. So I don't want to go over each of these lines because that's a lot of information, but the idea here is to give you a one-page snapshot where you can look at different starting market values down the left-hand column, and then you can think about starting distributions now in 3 years or in 5 years, what that does to your projected market value of the permanent funds, and what kind of average annual distributions you would be distributing, and a cumulative distribution amount. So I want to pause there for a minute because I know this is a lot of information, but our goal here was to help you, you know, to provide some information to help you kind of put, you know, the pieces together and start honing in on what seems like the optimal starting market value as well as the optimal distribution timing. I will say in conclusion of my remarks on this page that the average distributions are associated with a percentage of the net earnings that we saw. So, for example, I said the moderate allocation has a 3.5% net earnings after we account for inflation. So that's how we calculated these average distribution amounts. And we also applied a spending formula, and that's the last slide that I'm going to cover. But given the amount of information on this page, I want to pause here just to see if there's any questions on how you read this page.
Questions or comments from the council? It's done now. Moving forward.
Okay. So I really am going to only make one other point about our analysis here, and I'm going to cover it on the next page. And I think there's two key points that we want to make here on the next page, which is you see these circles on the right-hand side, and it says investment policy, spending policy, and contribution policy. So our goal at the end of the day is to make sure we help you develop policies associated with each of these areas. So the investment policy, of course, lays out, you know, what is the allocation we'd like to have for the permanent fund? Is it moderate? Is it moderate growth? It'll also, of course, lay out key points related to what's allowable in terms of investments and what isn't, and provide proper risk controls for the city. And then we want to think about the contribution and spending policies as well, because our experience tells us when we get all three of these policies working together, we tend to be a lot more successful. And so our goal, of course, would help you develop a spending policy for your permanent fund. And so in our analysis that we just showed on the prior page, we applied a very common spending policy that we see for other permanent funds that we manage. And that's the percent of market value structure. A lot of people might already be familiar with this because it's similar to what the State of Alaska Permanent Fund does. But essentially what we're doing here is we would look at the permanent fund's ending market value over a five-year time horizon. So we got to build up those 5 years first. But once we have 5 years, we look at each year's ending market value for the permanent fund, and the distribution amount is the, you know, net earnings amount, the sustainable rate, applied to that market value average. Now, the purpose of doing this is really important, actually. So we know inside the permanent fund, we're going to be investing for a long time horizon. We're going to be taking some risk. And we saw some of that risk on the prior pages, what we could experience in down markets. But we also acknowledge that the goal of the permanent fund is also to provide stable distributions. We don't really want our distributions to be all across the board. Otherwise, it's hard to create a budget around that. And so by doing this averaging of the historical market values, you can have a more steady or a more stable distribution amount. And essentially also by averaging, you are, by creating a spending policy that kind of absorbs some of your portfolio volatility. So, for example, if you have, you know, some steady growth for a few, you know, 4 years, let's say, but then we have a crisis situation like COVID, your distribution amount won't be materially impacted because you have 4 good years and 1 bad year, right, to average out. And essentially what this does from a math perspective is it automatically adjusts your distribution to the effects of the returns from the portfolio, and then it provides a more stable distribution amount. And so in the analysis on the prior page, when we're giving you all of those distribution numbers and cumulative distribution numbers, we did so utilizing this spending policy that we commonly see. So I'll pause there for a minute to see any questions on the spending policy that we, or parameters we utilized in our analysis.
Comments on the policies? Okay, we're fine here.
Okay. So that was the end of our prepared remarks. And so we'd like to, you know, of course we're here to answer any questions. All of the other material that we provided is the individual simulations that we actually did to create the table that we provided with all the numbers.
Hey, Brandy, this is Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And for the council, kind of going back to the previous page, please, I guess my question for you as, you know, sitting in front of council and going back to the sustainability and, you know, maybe a percentage of the money, the distribution working back into the budget to make up for any revenue shortfalls, is it fair to say that two of the, you know, it, ranking what is most important about the distribution, you know, from a starting value, you know, a $25 million, $30 million, $35 million portfolio, if you start distributions now or 3 years or 5 years, or picking between a moderate or moderate growth, which ones are the most important to give you the most distributions or stable distributions?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the policy, the spending policy that we applied here, you know, creates that stable distribution amount. But I'm hearing, you know, a good question here, which is, you know, how might we think of these, or which is more important, which of these variables is more important? And so I think I'm going to focus in on the distribution start time and how that relates to your budgetary needs. Because certainly if you don't immediately need distributions from your permanent fund, then you could start the distributions later in 3 or 5 years. And by doing so, you could potentially fund less in the permanent fund, right? Because you're allowing some time for growth. And so I think that assessing when the timing or the need for the distribution is one good next step. And then I would say, and Vinay, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would say the moderate growth allocation is very much in line with what we see in other permanent funds. But you could also, you know, stay moderate. But I think that either one of those two portfolios is certainly suitable. And so I wouldn't put as much weight on that. I would just focus on, do I feel comfortable with the risk profile of these two allocations, because I do want to acknowledge that we're moving from a very conservative history of investing to now something that has more growth associated with it. So that's a long-winded answer, but I do think the starting distributions and how that fits into your projected budget is an important consideration. And then you could calibrate your budgetary needs by looking at the different funding levels.
Where are we on your slides?
Well, okay, so that was the information we wanted to share. I realize it was only three slides, but there's a lot of heavy information here, I think, to digest. And so I think that this is a starting point for discussions, right? If you begin to have internal discussions that leads you into any other different scenarios you'd like to see, we could certainly run those. But the idea here was to give you some information to help you start thinking about, again, what type of risk profile you would like, moderate or moderate growth, what size of the permanent fund is appropriate to fund it, and when do you want to start those distributions. And so I guess I'd say for council, just looking for feedback not related to a particular decision, but whether or not this information is helpful and whether or not you need anything else from us at this time.
Councilman Coleman.
Thank you. This question may be more directed to Mr. Sharp, since he gave the initial memo. I guess, so I, one of the first things that obviously he said we had to consider is how much we're going to start with in the pot, so to speak. So I was going back on my notes back in September, and we were initially looking at a $25 million permanent fund amount, and based on my very sketchy notes, that's where the breakdown went to. And now we're actually being proposed a $40 million to go to this. So I'm, and I don't have those. I don't have that particular memo in front of me, but I was wondering, that seems like a big change. Yeah. So, and how can we comfortably even consider $40 million at this point?
I'll jump in and Bill or Jim, you can correct me if I go astray on any of this, but basically you're correct, Councilmember Coleman. We originally proposed $25 million for the emergency fund and $25 million for the permanent fund. It was during the discussions that we had with City Council where it seemed like there was a significant interest by Council into increasing that dollar amount for the permanent fund, and $40 million was specifically mentioned. Because that was such a huge jump, we worked with APCM to provide some other options, which you see before you, which include that not only the $25 million and the $40 million, but some of the other increments of 30 and 35. So that's kind of how we got here.
So what got axed? I mean, where did it had to come from somewhere, one of the other pots. So where did that, I mean, it just didn't come out of somewhere. Would $40 million, I mean, safely cover the other parts that we're trying to work towards?
That's what Jim's memo is trying to address. And $40 million gets us pretty darn close, which is why staff is not recommending any more than $40 million. So Jim, maybe you can touch a little bit more on some of it. I think probably that last paragraph. Well, I'm not sure, but in your discussion points, maybe that last paragraph a little bit to outline for Councilmember Coleman some of the risks or caution associated with the increased amount in the permanent fund.
Sure. So I think the way that I look at this is the more you set aside for permanent fund, the greater that initial amount, the less financial flexibility the city has, just in general. But that being said, you do have the $25 million that's set aside for emergency operations. That's there for the use of the city if they so choose. In other words, if something were to come up that wasn't expected, council could put forth or could pass a resolution to move some of those monies or make them available for other items. And again, so the more you have in the permanent fund, the less flexibility you have, and vice versa. If you did $25 million, you'd have a lot more flexibility, and any shortfalls for that, you would have additional cash and to be able to fund some of that. At $40 million, it's going to be a little bit more, could become a bit more tricky.
This is Bill, if I can jump in here. I think the other why we went this route with this is not to, you know, pick the ultimate portfolio from APCM to the council and not to sway, but it was to provide an array of options for you guys, for council, and to show that when we're looking at the distributions and taking the average distribution, there's three ways to increase that average distribution. One is to increase the starting value of the market, of the portfolio. The second one is to kind of increase the risk of the portfolio, moving from moderate to moderate growth. And then the third way to increase the distribution over time is to delay the initial distribution. And that's why we did, you know, if we distributed right away in July 22nd, 3 years and 5 years. So it was to provide a, you know, large amount of data to you guys in a way to see that and to guys as much information as possible to make these decisions.
Okay. I mean, yeah, thank you. I appreciate the little bit of background to help me with that. So yes, where are we at? Are we gonna just continue with our comments or you wanna go around? Because you kind of trying to get an idea, City Manager, Ms. Reinders, about where we're, what our three thoughts are. So
make a selection on the bucket strategy, policy drafting.
Mr. Mayor, if I could.
Go ahead.
I think if we, the slide that's on the screen right now, I have to say, is absolutely beautiful in my mind. But it does a good job in kind of highlighting the key points that we are looking for feedback on. If you guys are ready to provide that feedback, and if you're not, we're happy to try to kind of go back and answer any other kind of questions that you have sitting out there. But basically, the three questions are, what do we want that starting value to be? So that column number one. Feedback on that. What do we want that portfolio to look like? Moderate. Or that moderate growth, and then what are your thoughts on when we might want to start receiving those distributions? What we had talked about a couple weeks ago or a month ago, I'm losing track of time, was a 1 year, like next year, or a 3 year, just to kind of round out those options. We added a 5 year component, so that distribution timing is the other feedback point that we're looking for. So those three primary questions.
Councilman Luby?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like where we got to this at, maybe to help with Sherry here, we had four different buckets of money, one being the operating cash that we had. We had the short-term reserves, the rainy day fund, and the permanent fund. And so if we started out with the 25, if we were to bump that up, I'm assuming we're not taking away from the rainy day fund. We would be taking away from the short-term reserves. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. You got okay. it.
Just kind of clarify where that money is coming from.
Yep.
I like what's up on the screen now because it gives us different options, which was something I was kind of interested in, to see what the different distributions could be with different scenarios. So that's great. But I think we, you know, before we can determine how much money we need to put in there, we need to decide what is our goal here with this fund. Is the goal to replace revenue that we're going to be missing? Is it going to be to, you know, fund something that we normally do out of the general funds or other funds? One thing that Sherry mentioned before was, you know, a way to fund the nonprofits, and maybe this is an option. You know, so I think we need to decide first off, you know, what's our goal with this money? Is it, you know, do we want to take distributions every year? Do we want to let it sit there as an emergency fund that, and then take a distribution? I think that's where you have to start, I think. I don't know about other council members, but we'll see what they say. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilman Tungle?
Yeah. I thought we went to this investment because we wanna increase some revenues to offset what are we losing, especially with the crab and other stuff that we are short of. I think this investment we came up to go with a little bit of risk in here, so we can compensate some of the losses that we're not getting with the, you know, industry. Correct me if I'm wrong. That's why we end up doing this permanent fund, so to offset some of the losses that we're not getting back in the days. So moving forward, this kind of covers some of the revenue that we're not getting for this investment. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think that's what we get. If we start distribution in 3 years and we need the money before then, what kind of penalty if we take that money?
This is Brandy. No penalty. So everything that we're proposing for investments in these allocations are very liquid, low cost. Mutual funds are exchange-traded funds that do not have any penalties associated with selling them.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Councilman Tungle. Councilman Robinson?
Yes, thank you. For me, I'd prefer to see the $40 million invested. And given the uncertainty of our situation, especially with crab, and some of the effects it may have as we find out more as to why they aren't there, may have an effect on the other fish that we depend on. I'd like to start drawing on it at a three-year interval. And do the moderate growth. We've had a lot of money for the city for a long time, and that we it really hasn't worked for us. We haven't made much on interest in it, and we need to put that money to work. Councilman Coleman suggested maybe that we fund the nonprofits. Well, I think it's a great idea because the nonprofits are what we're going to need, and we've always relied on them when times were tough. They came about in this community due to us losing, you know, the state of Alaska not taking part in some of the things in providing what they used to provide. It forced a lot of us to create these nonprofits. So I think it's a great, an excellent idea to put that forward and fund the nonprofits out of that. I don't know that we need to fund them the total amount of what we could be, you know, withdrawing or drawing down on the investments, but I think we can still design a policy that keeps us pretty close to the line where of where we are now. So those are my thoughts. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilman Robinson. Councilman Bell?
Yeah, I'll go over a couple. The first point was, you know, I'd like to see this money that's set aside in a permanent fund as a, you know, a moderate growth, put some of this money to work. Yeah, and as far as starting distributions, a three-year, I think, is probably a little more prudent. I was going to. I had some other thoughts here, and kind of lost track of where I was at on those. As far as a starting balance or some kind of balance that we want to put in a permanent fund, my view is to work backwards a little bit and look at what we have set aside for emergency operations, city operations, proprietary funds, and whatever monies aren't allocated. And theoretically, that should come up with a dollar amount that we have just sitting. Either making very little interest or, you know, almost no interest now. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, to Councilmember Bell's point, that is exactly what is outlined in Jim's memo. So he kind of walks you through he walks you through how much money we actually have on hand in the various accounts, how those are all accounted for in the various funds, you know, with the general fund and how that, and then also the proprietary funds, and then what actually would be left over should $40 million be set aside, which also accounts for the $25 million emergency fund.
And then I wrote down a question here, and I'm not sure if it'll actually be very relevant to this, but, you know, my thought was that are there other communities or municipalities that use a similar model or components of similar models? And the state came to mind as, you know, one obvious, but if so, are there lessons to be learned from those or pitfalls or what, you know, what strategies have worked good for other communities?
Yes. So overall allocation investments in the moderate growth portfolio is generally what we've been seeing for longer-term permanent fund assets. The portfolio differs a bit from the state of Alaska because the state of Alaska holds a lot of private investments that are not very liquid. And so these portfolios differ in that regard because everything is very liquid. So we see a lot of municipalities in that moderate growth allocation. I will say in terms of what has worked and what hasn't worked, I would say what has worked is, first establishing the overall allocation and then also adhering to the strategy you choose as the, you know, spending policy and contribution policy that you set out. And I think the other part that has made some of the municipalities we work with successful is acknowledging that although we're talking about starting a long-term investment and developing associated policies with them, that these are things that we revisit with them each year. And the purpose of that annual confirmation is twofold, really. One is to check in with the municipalities, see if any circumstances have changed, which warrant a change to our investment strategy. And the second is to allow APCM, the opportunity to provide any advice that we have that could make the portfolio more efficient in terms of earning a better return or reducing risk. And so those municipalities who go through that process of, making sure all the policies initially are developed and working together and then confirming them each year have been really successful. What hasn't worked, in which is also very rare, is whether it's a municipality or another long-term client that gets into a stressful market condition like what we experienced in March of last year and abandons their long-term strategy because they're nervous about what's happening in the current market conditions. And so that rarely happens, but oftentimes when we reflect historically on how that plays out, those clients haven't tended to be successful in terms of achieving the desired results, because it takes some time to make the decision to get back into the market, and it takes some time recover your losses that you locked in by selling because you were nervous about current market conditions. And so because of that situation, that is why we wanted to make sure we shared with you this evening the range of potential returns we think you can experience. And again, you'll hear us on a regular basis really trying to make sure that we revisit this at least on an annual basis, because although we're developing these policies now, then nothing is set in stone, and we have an opportunity to adjust to market conditions or adjust to changing situations for the city's budget.
Thank you. Councilman Nicholson?
The question that let me make a comment. I would like to see the moderate growth and 3 years to find out exactly what we can actually afford to put into that. And what would the penalties be if we needed to reach into that monies if we needed it in the future? Or are there any?
So there are no penalties if you have to reach into it. So, for example, if you make a decision to try to wait to take distributions for 3 years, and in year two, you actually need to take a distribution, there are no penalties from an investment perspective to do so. So the key point that you want to make sure you adhere to, regardless of when you start the distribution amount, is making sure that you can adhere to the sustainable distribution amount. And what I mean by that is, you know, I shared earlier, for example, the moderate allocation, you can distribute 3.5%. And so what's not sustainable, I guess, is if you in 1 year, you know, decide you're going to distribute 7% and then you distribute 5%. Now, I guess the penalty per se would be that you would be eroding away your principal by not adhering to the rate. But certainly from investment perspective, there is no penalty to sell and begin taking distributions earlier than initially planned.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Councilman Nicholson. Like the $40 million, I know that once we decide that amount, back with policy drafting, unfunded transfer policy. So that'll all be brought in by APC. Is that correct? Once you get a starting figure.
Yes. I mean, we can help. In terms of thinking about spending and contribution policies, not only for the permanent funds, but for the other buckets of money that we've discussed.
Okay. The reason I ask is we talked a little bit about how the money is going to be used and where it's going to be withdrawn and all that. I think as we move through this process and we identify the budgeted amount that we're going to be having in the permanent fund, we have time to consider nonprofits or whatever we need to use the money for new projects or whatever it is, be able to do that as we move forward.
and but we identify the 1 year or 3 years. I would say the 1 year, only because of our what was mentioned by Councilman Robinson, is the loss of the three basic crab revenues that we're going to lose for the next 5 to 6 years. And every year is different. Our infrastructure is getting old and needs to be, at some point we're going to have to do a lot of work to not only keep our water and sewer going, but we've got a landfill that's falling, is loading up, and we got plenty of things to use the money for. We just have to wait till the and we make the plans to how we're going to use that money. But I'm for the $40 million, doing a at least for 3 to 5 years through this hard times we're looking at, to be able to draw some funds out on an annual basis, a percentage, whatever that is. Councilman Tunkel, Luby, and Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Thank Mayor. Yeah, I think $40 million with a moderate growth is the way to go on this one. We have those money sitting for a long time without gaining anything, and where the money goes, I like the nonprofit, but at the same time, we got to think of the school. We always funded the school to the full amount that they needed. So I think we got to widen that instead of the concentrating just on the nonprofit. I think we got to think about the school. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Luby.
Yeah, so I do like the $40 million as well. I think, you know, putting the money to work for you is the best option to do. The moderate growth is good if, you know, if we can, bear the extra volatility or whatever of the market, which I think we can. But the one thing that I was just kind of doing the math on, whether it's 1 year, 3 years, or 5 years for distribution, you jump up to that five, and maybe, and I might have this wrong, but what I'm looking at between the 1 and the 5 year, there's $340,000 extra annually is what I'm assuming that is between the 1 year and the 5 year, or, you know, starting in 2022 versus a 5 year plan. If you were to take it in 3 years, between the, you know, taking it in 2022 and going to the 3 year plan, it's, you know, there's, it goes from 150 to 180,000 additional annually. But the jump is much bigger when you get into that 5 year, and I'm assuming that's from compound interest over 5 years, so you're, you know, just continually to grow. So I guess my question would be that average distribution is an annual distribution over 10 years, so that's 340 extra thousand. We usually talk millions, so thousands isn't a whole lot. But the 3 year, 1 year, 5 year, you know, I don't know if it makes that much of a difference. Like I said, 150,000 to 180,000, I don't know that that makes that much of a difference. But the 5 year is a little more substantial, but can we hold out that long with the loss of revenue we're going to get? So that's one thing I'm not sure of, which, how many years. So, but the other ones, I agree, 40 and the moderate growth.
Okay. Thank you, Councilman. Anyone else? Okay, continue, please.
Okay, so we have this table here where we do have, you know, all of the simulations we ran on one page. If you'd like, I could go through one of, you know, just one of the simulations so that you can kind of see where these numbers came from and kind of what we provide you know, as we're doing this type of analysis. And so we looked at the table with all of this information. We have each of these individual simulations that Vinay calculated for you as well. And so this one is, if you started with $25 million and your annual withdrawals begin next fiscal year, so July of 22, and the withdrawals would be based upon the sustainable rate. So for the moderate allocation, the withdrawal percentage is 3.5%, and for the moderate growth allocation, it's 4%. And so to look at the chart on the right-hand side, what we're seeing is,
Erin.
Yes?
Can I interrupt you for a second? I'm wondering if we go over the slide that's actually about the $40 million, I think you could probably talk through it the same exact way, but then the numbers might be a little bit more identifiable for council. I think Karen's already switched.
Sure.
Karen's already.
And is there a preference for the starting distribution amount when we start it now, 3 years or 5 years?
3 years.
3 years. So you'll want to advance one more slide? I like that suggestion. Thank you. And can you advance one more slide? Oh, there we go. Okay. Oh, no.
Yep, keep going.
Yeah,
one
more. Right there. $40 million beginning distributions in 3 years. So we invest $40 million. We began distributions in 2024. Again, the moderate distribution percentage is 3.5% of the average portfolio market value. Moderate growth is 4% distribution. So if you look at the graphic on the right-hand side, we would say if you chose the moderate growth allocation, our base case estimate is that after distributions, your $40 million would be at $53.1 million 10 years from now. So that black line under moderate growth is kind of our base case estimate. If you chose a less risky allocation like the moderate allocation, we think the $40 million initial contribution would grow to $52.1 million 10 years from now after you take out the annual associated distributions, which began in 3 years. So the table at the bottom of the page gives the distribution amount in millions of dollars. So as you can see, the distributions began in 2024, and our estimate is that that distribution would be $1.52 million for the moderate allocation, and it would be $1.75 million for the moderate growth allocation. And then you can see each of the subsequent years what our projected distribution amount would be.
Hey, Brandy, looking at the slide, kind of a question. To maintain those distributions per the modeling under the moderate growth, 1.75 in the year 2024, and then to maintain that, to be able to have the distribution to be 2.1 million in year 2031, it's important not to go in and take out the corpus of the fund, meaning what was initially distribution, the original market value, is not to go in and take any of that out. Those numbers assume that the corpus stays in the portfolio the whole time, correct?
Yeah. So there could be a time period early on in the horizon where you might be spending some corpus. But since in this simulation, we waited 3 years, you have some cushion around your corpus. Now, I will say that to your point, by spending the sustainable rate of either 3.5% or 4% over the 10-year horizon, you will be not invading corpus according to our estimates. However, early on, depending upon the market movement, there could be an initial market value below corpus, but as long as you continue to spend 3.5% or 4%, then you should be okay over the 10-year horizon that you will not invade corpus.
Thank you.
And remember, we're growing the corpus amount by 2% a year, you know, in our projections, so that 10 years from now, you are, you know, your distribution amounts in real terms, what you can actually do with that money is the same, you know, 10 years from now as it is today. So that's why your $40 million grows to either 52.1 or 53.1, because we're preserving some for inflation protection.
Well, I hear a majority of so far agree with the $40 million starting at the moderate growth, moderate level,
3.5%. Any comment from council? Coleman? Councilman Coleman?
Well, it sounds like you're already a majority. That's that $40 million, that's one quarter of your cash, that's your assets. So that seems like a lot to me, just to be sitting, waiting, and pulling off of, especially now. So, I mean, it sounds like that's the way most people want to go. I probably would have pulled back and looked at like 30, but I'm okay with the moderate growth. Make it work for you. I feel pretty comfortable with that. And starting, obviously, the longer you wait, you know, mathematically speaking, the better off you are. I'm pretty happy, though, with the 3-year wait on this. I think we can see how this thing pans out. I think we already kind of know over the next few years where we're going to go. If we can hold that, it's going to work out for us, I think, in the long run, instead of doing it right away. But I think I'm open, pretty much open to that too. So I think there's some good uses for this. Like I said, I originally, you know, I wanted to say, well, okay, what could you use this money for? What would be a good purpose and kind of work? And then how much do you usually use at what comes out of the general fund for those? And then kind of work your way backwards and see where the monies go. And one of the things I definitely considered would be the community grant that comes out of a percentage of our budget, and those, and of course that fluctuates, and if it goes to something like this, there probably wouldn't be that greater fluctuation. In fact, it should increase. So even if our budget decreased, those groups can still somewhat reasonably rely on a certain steady rate, because they provide so much for this community, and then that money would be available outside of the general fund, because it's what we wouldn't take out anymore. So that was my thought and proposal for there. Obviously, you know that can change, but looking back, so then if you were looking at the values there, they were at $40 million. Any of those are going to pretty much cover what I was considering we I'd like to see come out, and that was with, you know, 1.3 and above, a little more. So it sounds like folks want 40. So I guess the distributions, I was trying to, so there's no, so So I guess you say there's no penalty, so I'm just trying to get this clear in my head. You say there's no penalties, but you don't want to touch the corpus. But if you increase the distributions, you would be in touching the corpus. But regardless of all of that, there are no penalties if something happens and you got to take larger distributions than you would normally want to do.
So I'm going to jump in a little bit, and then Brandy can correct everything that I've said. But I think the important thing from my perspective in what council's contemplating right now is some sort of sustained, controlled, predictable revenue source from here on out, right? That's why it's called the permanent fund, you know? So that's why it's important that whatever ends up getting decided, and I'm going to pass this along to Brandy really quick before I get out of my league here, but that's why it's important to try not to take any more than what that distribution policy has laid out. So, I mean, I think the team at APCM have done a fantastic job modeling this all out and putting all those assumptions in. So that sustained, that distribution plan allows for that core investment to continue to grow in such a way that sustains the distribution. Does that make sense? Okay. So, Brandy, correct me.
I think it all makes sense, and I'll just add to it and say that, yes, I'll reiterate that from an investment perspective, we won't have to pay any penalties in order to sell this should, you end up needing to spend more than initial projections. The couple other points I'll make here is that as long as you're adhering to the sustainable spend rate, and it seems like we're honing in on the moderate growth, so that rate is 4%. As long as you're adhering to that 4% spend rate, even in down markets, we think over the long time horizon, you'll be in a position where you are inflation protecting your corpus. Now, I will point out that a couple of other items, which is, as I mentioned earlier, although we're talking about, allocating money to a long-term asset, again, these, nothing is set in stone, and we can certainly make adjustments if we need to. If you try to initially wait to take distributions for 3 years, there are some benefits to that because hopefully you'll have some portfolio growth over that 3-year horizon. And should you get to year 3 and you need to spend more than 4% of the portfolio, hopefully you'd have some cushion in there to do so. So you are kind of by, waiting to take distributions, providing some additional layer of benefit should you end up having to in a year spend more than the sustainable rate. Now, the amount that you can spend above the sustainable rate and still be successful would just be dependent upon the portfolio returns in those first initial years. And since we're not setting anything in stone and we can, make adjustments to these policies, even if your initial goal is to wait for 3 years and you have to actually distribute, for example, in year 2 because your budget requires you to or you have budgetary needs, as long as in year 2 you adhere to the 4% sustainable rate, you'll be okay as well.
Okay. Any questions? For council? I'll turn it over to city manager and see where we have to go right now. I was reading back and forth from the dealer, and then all the way down to the beginning, it talks about we have to select a moderate amount and then moderate or moderate growth that would come in on the second round.
Yes, I think we've made great headway tonight. So we've answered 3 very important questions. I think the next step is for us for staff to get back with APCM and kind of map out, take what you've kind of the direction that you provided tonight, And then we'll figure out what that next step is. And it might be some combination of digging into some policies or really kind of taking that next step and having a similar discussion into what the emergency fund might look like. But we will know more after I get to talk with APCN after this meeting. So Bill or Brandy, is there anything else that you all might need or want to provide to council at this point?
If Bill could see me, I would be looking at him, because, and I want to defer to him because he's been involved in the conversation since the beginning. I will say that from my perspective at this point, I do want to reiterate that we made a lot of progress tonight. I know there was a lot of moving parts there. We can follow up and work with Aaron and Jim to, start working up some draft investment policy and spending policy language associated with the permanent fund, and continue our analysis in terms of how this particular perm fund situation might impact the other policies or how we're using them in terms of the other buckets. And so we could continue our analysis with them and come back with another step.
I don't have much more to add to what Brandy was saying, but just know that this is just another step in this process as we work through the final goal for you guys throughout time. And I appreciate your guys' time tonight.
And I'll just make a closing comment that I think is important, which is, we've worked with some permanent funds that have been in place for, well over 20 plus years. And I think that the overall efforts that the council is making in terms of optimizing your reserves and the returns on your reserves is going to be very successful. We've seen many municipalities who have dedicated the time to do this end up in situations where they have met their goals in terms of, providing some additional revenue to the city on a regular basis. And so I think important to that success is taking the time to look at all of this information as we have tonight. And also important moving forward is making sure that we keep an agenda item on an annual basis to revisit our decision, why we made it, and confirm that it is the continuation or the appropriate strategy, as we move forward through time. So that annual confirmation, I think, is also important to success, but I am excited for the city. I think that you have a great situation here, and we're happy to help you try to develop all of these investment strategies and policies.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for helping getting us through this process. I know it is a bit confusing, but we're starting to get it. So, thanks.
No problem.
Okay. So we need, you don't need anything, we're going to come back using that $40
million? Yes. We'll use the $40 million moderate growth, and then probably the three-year, taking distributions at that three-year point. But I suspect there'll be other opportunities for us to talk through that. But that's the direction we'll head.
Break? What? Do you need a break? What's for? Two more hours to go here. We'll take a break. Okay, yeah, I'll get back to you. Thanks, sir. Oh, we're back in session. City manager. Go ahead, Bill, or City Bill. Manager.
For the benefit of time, I'll
go ahead and pass time, I'll go ahead and
Bill, the planning director.
To Bill,
this
the planning
annual
director.
Visit,
this is an annual visit
to council for the CMMP
and
budget
CMMP
calendar, as well as the ranking criteria. I will say, and Bill touches on this in the memo, but and I'm sure he'll touch on it in the presentation, but council will likely get to experience additional meetings during this budget cycle as we kind of wade through some of the implications of CRAB and et cetera. But so with all that said, Bill, go ahead and take it away, sir.
That covers everything I was going to say. I don't know. I'm starting to think I was set up for this, having that big, long $40 million discussion. Now we're going to talk about CMMP. So I'll quick go through some of my comments. I hope some of you had a chance to read the report, so you won't be shocked by some of the discussion here real quick. But, you know, every year we do this, capital major maintenance plan process, and when we propose a schedule of deadlines and meeting dates to prepare this plan. It's a very complicated plan from the standpoint of we put together ideas and nominations from all of the different directors, and it goes through a rather intense vetting process. A few years ago, we started a new process where we started ranking what the criteria are, and that's something that we typically now present to you, and we'll be looking in November for your feedback. But there are 8 categories for evaluating and ranking projects according to city priorities, and there's a point system that awards projects that have been on CMMP longer, thus encouraging them to plan. Recall last year, last year was the first year we went from a 5-year plan to a 10-year plan. It's interesting that they're also looking at 10 years for your permanent fund. And part of that was because a lot of those projects were being held sort of on there to kind of keep on the radar. It still was a $230 million plan, basically, that we reviewed last year. There's a lot of steps, as I said, and we've also amended our calendar to reflect not just the CMMP meeting dates, if you'll probably find a quick calendar towards the back, but also our typical meeting dates or submission dates for our normal budget, for operational budgets. Been asked to include the school board when they typically start doing their budgeting. I reached out and they gave me a couple key dates. Those are shown in the pinkish red up there. The Planning Commission meetings, they meet and they review this. We funnel it through them for some additional public input and a set of eyes. But all of your dates at this point are identified in the blue, as always. I think in addition to looking at these dates and sort of what Aaron was alluding to is I think this year we'll probably be looking to have some additional meetings and discussion. There's a lot of fluctuation, a lot of things happening financially that we're not quite sure how that's going to net out. And I think it's appropriate for council, not that you need more meetings or you're required to have more meetings, but the city manager and I have discussed different ideas about making you aware of when these dates are so that one or two of you, if you're interested, want to show up, see how we discuss projects, see how we debate pros and cons about them. Some go on longer than others, obviously. That way, I sometimes am concerned that it looks like this big spreadsheet is brought to you and I'm the spokesperson and I sell you this, you know, great new car, and there's a lot more that goes into it. I think in further discussions, you all should be aware by now that the city manager, in review of the budget situation and our forecast, has issued a stay on any new projects for this fiscal year coming up, FY 22-23 funding year. That kind of excludes projects that have already been committed to, for example, the dredging project, our trenching project. Those are kind of, some of those have different stipulations. One, the dredging project is a huge $20-some million grant, and we're required to give $4 million in match each year. And so that's one project, and the other is the trenching project, for example, that we've already signed, and that's a multi-year project. But other projects that come up, I think, as you've had our new 10-year plan, you can look and see what we're talking about. But still, I think we need to kind of think about, you know, what are we doing? This is my 6th CMMP, and a lot of times I feel the process works somewhat well among the directors. I like coming up here and presenting the projects. They always come up and answer additional questions. That's how it should be. I certainly don't know all the answers. But one of the things that keeps happening is we have, you know, for example, I said a $230 million plan we reviewed last year. Now, albeit you only fund that first year, but there's still $200+ million in planning out there on this 10-year plan now. And I think I'm compelled to really draw your attention. I'll just read the paragraph. You know, so there's an imbalance here in what we're doing. We're moving into a new budget cycle. The F-22-23 has a 10-year capital budget of $225 million. The general fund comprised the bulk of that, $158.2 million. That's 68.4% of that plan that you reviewed. If you look down a little further, Karen, if you'll go to the page that has the annual CMMP general fund budget, a five-year history, one of the things we try to do is keep the general fund contribution to that annual plan $5 million or under. And we've somewhat been successful at $4.8 million is the average for those years, excluding the year that we were debating the library. And at that time, and I only put in the initial budget of the $5 million because I was kind of under a time crunch, and I couldn't recall how we amended that, if that was that actually amended the CMMP. But so that could fluctuate a little bit if you made it eight. But there's no way you're going to fund most of these projects if we have the current idea that we have to fund a project with the amount of money that's coming in and the amount of money that's going out. I mean, if you just think of some of these things that you're looking to do, do we need or want a new police station? It's over $20 million. Fire station, $11 million. You're not going to fund that with a $5 million contribution out of your general fund, and that's where those funds are coming from. There's no proprietary fund for those expenses. The proprietary funds obviously exist to maintain those sources that people are paying into. So it's a rather interesting confluence that we're talking about setting $40 million aside and looking at this looming budget issue, and we still have a lot of needs. Some are wants, some are looking forward to trying to not have a need much worse years later, but I think you're going to have to be a little more engaged at this budget round in helping staff determine what comes before you. Because merely presenting a $230 million budget with projects on it affects a lot of things. Affects your bond rating, affects other legal things that people look at. And the longer it stays on there, you might have a pretty fund over here, but it's like, what are you all doing over here? And I don't have an answer for you for that. So, me keeping it short and cutting out all the nice words, that's it. But there's several things we are trying to do, as I think we've mentioned before. You know, we're certainly always trying to look at, I mean, as someone mentioned, phone, how many phones we have, and I think that's, I don't think we're at that point because the kinds of expenses and projects for, number one, the cost of living out here, you need to start bigger if you're just looking at phones. But we're looking at pairing grant resources, if there are out there, to try and help address some of these funds. And that's something that all the directors will be looking to help with, because there's no one source to go to a list and see, can I marry this with that? It's something that a lot of us are used to doing, but it's not currently our job. So, but garnering a good grant administration program is an investment. So again, now you're looking at, it's not an ask, it's just a statement. Usually pays for itself, but you have to weigh that need and that strategy with all of your other strategies on what will pay off and what won't, what's an existing obligation you can't avoid. Continuing to explore what we can do with some of our partners, business partners, other partners, including the Q Tribe and OC, to help fund some of these, to help make headway on some of these. It may not be as fast as we want to, but at least there'll be some strategy and some plan of attack for the projects that we really need. So I guess in a nutshell, this going into my sixth year for this is going to be probably a lot different, I think, than what we've experienced before. I'm not a big fan of mega meetings, however you want to chunk them up. If you like doing them all here on the floor as workshops, that's great. If you all have some other ideas, some other kind of meetings or data we can give you to help, please reach out, feel free. And I think that's basically it. Oh, and then I do have the exercise for you to go ahead and add what you think your priorities are from the 8 priorities. And I should say that I failed to mention, we're going to be amending the prioritization, the process grant manual, to add in council's priorities that you've added for your federal and state priorities. I think any projects that meet or address those should garner points as well. So I don't want you to think we just listen to you pass resolutions, but we don't pay attention. It's just that's been kind of a quick turnaround. So we'll be adding some sort of a weighted point value for projects that address whatever the priorities are, whether they change year to year, it'll just state what are the top 3 priorities and they'll get points. So we'll be amending the process guide to reflect your work. Any questions?
All right, thanks. A lot of things to think about there you put up, but I'll ask for council's comments or questions for you.
Sure.
Where we stay at the midnight.
I missed the last part, I'm sorry.
Councilman Luby?
Yeah, thank you for the input and the feedback there. And last year I listened to the CMMP, and it is a long process, and how do you decide, you know, how much to put into projects, special projects. And you're right, there's never enough money. And so it's always something to kind of look at. And there is a lot of federal money out there that's available, and also to the tribe, there's a lot of federal money. And if you can partner up with them on some of their projects, you know, and what, you know, their grants, if we had grants. But I know the tribe also has an issue with grant writers. You know, someone out there looking, there's so many grants that would be available for them as well. And I don't know if there is a way that we can partner up with them to actually have a grant writer for both, maybe, because there is a lot of money out there, but somebody has to take the time to go get it and apply for it. So,
yeah, and that was a significant portion of our discussion that we've been having about really taking more advantage of some of those opportunities that are out there. I think nobody is questioning the fact that there are plenty of opportunities out there. It's just right now, where's the capacity that in current staff to really be focusing in on chasing those down and then writing those and then in managing them and reporting on them? I mean, so there's just a lot that goes with it. And so I don't have a just, clear path forward, but we're thinking through all of that. And I think partnerships are definitely a key.
Yeah, it is definitely, definitely a lot of work. You know, there's the managing, like you said, and the reporting end of it. Time to look at something, somebody to do something like that. I know increasing staff is not always a favorable thing, but this one might.
Councilman Luby, Councilman Coleman.
Tiger Grant. I mean, we've had staff that are able to do it. I'm not trying to put work on anybody, but it's been done before, and they've been able to manage to bring grants forward to us. So, I just want to say that, yeah, it's. Dedicating a person, I think we have dedicated people who have been able to show that they can do that.
So, I certainly don't want to represent that staff has never chased down huge grant opportunities. I will say that Tiger Grant opportunity, that was definitely all hands on deck. I mean, we had several directors and others working on that. And the magnitude of projects that we're looking at that Bill has outlined slightly in this memo that I think we're talking to a different scale than we've ever been looking at before, but certainly yes, we've done it before. I think now it's just a different scale and probably a more holistic approach to it.
If I can just address that, and partly having run a program before, the fun part is getting the grant, chasing the grant, making the award. It's the administering it, the reporting, all of the different things. If it's a construction grant, what funds are available, who's doing the prevailing wage monitoring, all the little things like that. There are several options, and I think we've discussed them. In terms of the services, for example, the Brownfields grant that was mentioned at the last meeting by one of our, I think, consultants, we did award a grant application based on that. They're doing all the work up front, and then if it's awarded, we'll pay them admin fees out of that. So there are other ways to do it, but chasing the grant as a resource versus chasing one that matches your project are two different things. So there's going to be a different strategy for those we really need. That resource, we may not have that flexibility. You need to spend, like what Aaron said, a lot of time on that. If we're going to try, for example, the Captain's Bay Road, seeing how that flushes out, that's a fairly huge amount of money when you add it all up. And whatever the STIP doesn't cover, if we want to continue onward, what else? What other sources are there? Keep in mind, bricks and mortar grants are the last things that are out there. Everyone always wants to give you a new program and wants to check off they're helping somebody or some sector of the population. No one wants to give you any money to build anything. So that's always a tough chase.
Councilman Bell?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't have necessarily any objection to, you know, the idea of a specific person as a grant writer. But are there that many grants out there that we either don't know about or have said, you know, hey, if we had a grant writer, we'd have the time to go after this grant or that grant? Or is it a case of we don't know what's out there until we actually look?
So to answer that question, my staff is already starting to pull together the matrix of the available grants from the sites that we know. Haven't had time to actually go around and meet with directors and ask for their input. Probably just needs to give them an email to ask. But there are, for example, Department of Justice grants, Bureau of Justice Assistance. There's a lot of those that have changed since I've been in that grant arena that each department may have a better idea. Before we would propose any kind of position, I think we'd certainly give you a menu of what we think the options are and what the payout would be. So we're doing that work.
Then I was just going to make a comment about, you know, we started with the 10-year plan last year, and I like that. And the fact that, you know, we can look out longer, we can queue up some projects we know we're going to have way out in the future when we know they're there. And if priorities change within there, then we could move one up or move one back. I think there'll be a little more critical eye this year on, you know, the projects, how necessary they are, where the money's coming from, and those type of things. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Councilman Nicholson?
Yeah, I'm a firm believer in trying to get somebody in here to find the grants and stuff. If one or two grants a year, if somebody can do that, that definitely pays for a lot of people's positions. So the more we can look at something like that, I'd be really in favor for. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Nicholson. Councilman Dungal?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, we just got to wait till they pass the budget to the president, probably get more money then. But how many projects we got going right now that that we're looking for this year, Bill, that we started?
If you're asking how many projects are already, we don't have any submitted yet, like I said.
In progress, that we already started.
Understand. Is Tom here? Tom, how many open projects do you have? I've asked Tom to come up and share with you what the statuses of our existing capital projects are.
Yeah, Mayor and Council. We have a number of projects. The number escapes me, but I believe it's 44 capital projects that are currently funded. But if I understand the question correctly, how many are in the process, like ready to be bid? Is that more specifically the question?
Yes.
Well, we have one large project, the library project, which the bids are due November 4th. That's really the only project that's up for bid at this point.
Did we do a study on the did some work on the Captain's Bay Road too that we started?
Yeah, well, we have the Captain's Bay Road project is still being designed, and we're working on phasing it. And we have not put that out for bids, but we had applied for a STIP grant and through the legislative funding process. So hopefully we can get some grant funding that way for that, for at least for phase one, which is the safety improvements.
I agree. Yeah, we got to wait, but we can get our name on the STIP in there. Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of money. We got to really look hard on this, on some of this project, if we can go forward or not on some of this, the way things is going right now. So thank you.
Hey, thank you, Councilman Tungle. Councilman Robinson?
Yes, thank you. I think a grant writer is a good idea because there is money out there. But as far as the CMMP, I think with the uncertainty of our economy right now, when they figure out what caused these crab to disappear, it may have an effect on, like I said earlier, it may have an effect on the other fish that we rely on. So, I mean, think to me, the CMMP, the most important part of that is to be able to keep the maintenance done on the investments that we've already have built. So we have that investment protected. And then look at projects. I almost think that the CMMP should be in two parts, and that's the maintenance. That's the stuff that we're going to spend first. Money on first, and then if there's any left, then we can look at the rest of it. But I think as it goes forward, we need to tighten belts. Some of these projects may have to be shelved, but we definitely have to protect what we have invested already. So I'll just leave it at there. Thanks.
No, thank you, Councilman Robinson. I was reading some of your notes, and the city's bonding ability and rates. Why are you saying that it's keeping large projects could impact the bonding rates if we're moving them forward? I mean, the biggest project we have on the books is that Captain's Bay Road. Like $57 million or something like that, but and we keep it on our CMMP stretched over next 10 years. How is that affecting us? Why is it affecting? You say it affects our city bonding.
So that sentence in its entirety says keeping large projects on the CMMP could possibly impact the city's bond ratings, complicate rate studies, and display a false impression of reality. I asked Jim if he has any comments on the bond ratings, but as a planner's point of view, you are anticipating, even though you adopt your plan yearly, this 10-year plan has what many will appear as an obligation that you're looking to expend $230 million over 10 years.
And folks will be looking at those projects that are listed, thinking that we're actually, that we're fully intending on bringing those to fruition. So there's a danger if the plan gets to be used as a parking lot of sorts, we'll try to get to it at some point, which is why we went to the 10-year, so we can actually more accurately represent, when we might be thinking of tackling some of these projects. But I think it's just incumbent upon all of us, staff and council, to really take a deep dive into the projects that are included in the CMMP, make sure that they are necessary projects, that they're projects that we could fund. I think that's come up a few times already, either through grant funding or through our own funding sources and reserves. Just make sure that it's a realistic picture of what the future might hold.
Okay, thank you. I think council needs to look at the CMMP process and those items that were in there and come to an agreement on what is important to the city for the next 5 to 6 years. It's going to take that long to recover the crab industry unless you got something sitting in your back pocket. You can pull out and say, well, here, I got this. Instead of fishing, we're going to be doing model building, for example. It's going to take care of our revenue. Well, that ain't going to happen. You know, and I understand what you're saying, Bill, about, you know, we have to look at what's important, what we need to have to continue to be stable community. When we had a lot of money, we were all at these. That's where everybody had a dream, you know, a bucket here and a bucket there for this, build that. And now it's coming to reality that we may not be able to do some of these stuff on the CMMP. At least that's what I'm looking at. I don't know how the rest of the council feels on it, but we pull off a project off the CMMP that's affecting the city for the next 5 or 6 years. So be it. That's what we have to do. And keep our infrastructure in play. Councilman Robinson is right. If we ignore our infrastructure, then you know, we may be building I don't know. Anyway, I feel kind of frustrated right now, but I'll get over it once I.
Well, if I may, since there's really a stay on new projects, it shouldn't be the amount of work and reporting that we've done before spending on those reviews, but I could see spending some of that time on working with you and our staff on what does that 10-year plan look like, and realistically, should it be on there or not? I think sometimes we keep it on there to placate folks and like, okay, well, this is what you want. I'll put it out 2 more years, but maybe there's no intention of really supporting that. And as we know, council's composition changes all the time. So what's out 5 years right now may not matter if some of you are going to retire or resign. But as far as a 10-year plan goes, it does matter. So I think we need to look at it a little less, maybe just a little more thoroughly in terms of what does $230 million look like on a piece of paper and should it be on there?
More questions? Councilman Bell?
Yeah, I was just going to make one more comment, and it's the projects that I see on the CMMP, when you look out a lot of years, you know, 6, 7, 8 years, you know, some of those projects that are out there are infrastructure projects. They're not projects that we need to do now, or they're projects that would increase capacity as far as a utility or so. My biggest focus is, yeah, we got this project. Is there a way to pay for it? And I don't necessarily, you know, have a whole lot of, you know, favoritism one way or the other what project it is, as long as it's necessary and we figure out a way to pay for it.
I tend to agree with you. Anyone else? All right, Bill, escape that one. Thank you very much.
Mr. Mayor.
Oh,
not to drag this out, but Bill, come back to the microphone. So what I'm hearing folks talk about really are some of those ranking criteria. And so Bill, can you succinctly, again, I'm not trying to drag this out, but what feedback are you looking for council feedback between now and the next meeting on those ranking criteria points?
Correct.
Okay.
That's the form that's in there, and we've always done is just emailed it to me and copied the clerk, typically, so we keep some sort of proper communication, and I'll present the result to you at the next meeting.
I would suggest then, if we are going to add on there the established council priorities and focus areas, go ahead and add that new line on there and then send out a new clean version of that so that they have the complete ranking criteria.
All right, I'll rework. I kept thinking the same thing, but there's another whole section in that plan that has the standard of how there's 88 things we review, if you recall, and this is how we weight them. But I'm thinking, just as a matter of course, we'll present that to you again and then make sure you're happy with that point value. I'm thinking like 5 points per
Okay. And it'll always just be...
So fill out the form standing. That Bill already gave you.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that works out.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Bill. So we have a little homework. Let's get, as a council, we're turning these feedbacks for the CMMP. All right. We're done with that one. So we'll move on to... regular agenda. Person wishing to speak on the regular agenda item must notify the clerk, and they have 3 minutes time limit. First item is the resolution 2021-70 establishing community-wide COVID-19 measures. We have a motion and a second to adopt resolution 2021-70.
Cool. Yeah. I'll make a motion to go move back into a regular session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, second by Councilman Coleman to go back into regular session. And it's 8:42. We're in regular session. First item is the resolution 2021-70 establishing community-wide COVID-19 protective measures. We have a motion and a second to adopt 2021-70.
I make a motion to adopt resolution 2021-70.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, second by Councilman Nixon to approve resolution 2021-70. I'll turn it over to City Manager for updates.
Mr. Mayor, do you want to do the drum roll? No. First. All right. So the good news is, as of this morning, we currently have 0 known active cases in Unalaska of COVID-19. So exciting news. The hope is, of course, that we update our dashboard Monday, Wednesday, and Friday now. So the hope certainly is that that remains at 0 tomorrow when we update our dashboard, but more will be known tomorrow. So that's the good news. Wastewater surveillance testing. We just got an email that is showing some signs of the SARS-CoV-2, but certainly the results remain quite low. So that's a good thing. So right now we remain at local low risk level, and before you this evening is a continuation really of the existing resolution that's currently in effect. So the resolution before you is set to expire on November 10th to be revisited on November 9th, the regular scheduled council meeting. Because we're at low, this continues to encourage rather than require face coverings, which is certainly consistent with our plan and what we've been working on all along. So I'm happy to answer questions that you might have. I believe Melanie is on the line if there are questions for her.
Okay,
I did
you.
Send our attorney home for this item. I figured we could cover it, though. So.
Okay, thank you, City Manager. I was very happy to hear that this morning when the report from Melanie and keep it up on Alaska. Anybody has a question, comment on the resolution? Well, hearing none, I'll call for a roll call on the resolution.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
sorry. anyone with comments or information for the community?
One brief comment, Mr. Mayor and Council, is we've sent out notices through Nexel just advising the community that the DMV office will be closed from November 1st through November 25th, and it will reopen on Friday, November 26th. Residents are still able to go online to the DMV online services, but all in-office services will be suspended from November 1st through the 25th. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chief. Any further community notices? I did want to thank PCR for a great haunted house program this last weekend. The other one was the swim and volleyball team. Are they leaving for tournaments or swim and volleyball?
Well, I know for a fact that the swim team is leaving a little bit today, and then the rest are leaving tomorrow. Volleyball team is also traveling. They left already.
They left? Okay, well, I just want to wish them good luck out there. Go Raiders. Okay, that's all I had. I guess last chance for anyone present to speak. Okay, City Clerk, has anyone written a comment or folks by Zoom?
No, sir.
Right, thank you. Our next item is 17. Need to read the motion language to move into executive session. Councilman Bell.
I move to adjourn into executive session to discuss matters related to the Haystack antenna site, which, if discussed in public, might negatively impact the financial and legal interests of the City of Unalaska.
Second.
Then moved and seconded to go into executive session by Councilman Bell and Councilman Nicholson at 8:58. So we're in executive session. Give us a couple of minutes, Bong, and then we'll be back on. Good night, Unalaska.